All right, turn to Revelation chapter 21. Thank you. We begin reading in verse 5 today. Focal point are verses 7 and 8, or 6b through 8. And he who was seated on the throne said, "Behold, I am making all things new." Also, he said, "Write this down, for these words are trustworthy and true." And he said to me, "It is done. I am the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. To the thirsty, I will give from the spring of the water of life without payment. The one who conquers will have this heritage, and I will be his God, and he will be my son." Thank you. "But as for the cowardly, the faithless, the detestable, as for murderers, the sexually immoral, sorcerers, idolaters, and all liars, their portion will be in the lake that burns with fire and sulfur, which is the second death." How can I become a citizen of the kingdom of God, the new creation? We know why God calls it new. It will never become old. All the things in this world that we call new, they will grow old, but God's new creation will be of an entirely different quality. It will never grow old. We know why God calls it new. And we know that it is more certain than anything that our eyes can see, because God himself, by his sovereignty and his competence as the creator, consummator, the Alpha Omega, guarantees it. Only one question remains: who will be there? Two images appear now before us. One who thirsts and one who conquers. A thirsty traveler in a dry landscape and a soldier on a battlefield. Are you thirsty? Do you conquer? As a thirsty traveler, you see yourself in your need before God, because only God can fill your need. Only he can quench your thirst. As a thirsty traveler, you see yourself in your need in relation to God. As the conqueror or the soldier on the battlefield, you see yourself in your strength and your resolve vis-a-vis the world. You are called to contend. You are called to conquer and to overcome. The two images with their promises will be our meditation. But before we look at these, first things first, let us revisit the big picture. Exodus and spiritual warfare are the two main literary motifs that carry the message of the book of Revelation in pictures: Exodus and spiritual warfare. The church is a wandering people, like ancient Israel in the wilderness. And the church is engaged in the epic conflict with the serpent, with the beasts and the harlot, and all of their allies, a conflict that has been from the beginning when God set enmity between his people and the people that belong to the world. There is a reason why the book of Revelation, that features so many images of warfare, some very grotesque pictures are being developed. There is a reason why the book of Revelation ends with visions of the new heaven and earth. It is because Jesus Christ wants you to stay the course on the journey of faith, because you are a wandering people, and Jesus Christ wants you to stay engaged in the spiritual conflict, because you are a soldier of the cross. It's like a battle scene in the movie Master and Commander, The Far Side of the World, plays in the early 1800s when Napoleon wants to extend his reach into the Pacific. A seasoned and old sailor, battle-proven sailor, spots a young officer in training. He could be no older than 15 years. And he is drowning in fear in the midst of an engagement. And so the old seasoned sailor puts his two fists together. He holds them together to expose his eight knuckles. And on each one of those eight knuckles, there is a letter, a tattoo. And the boy sees the knuckles and he reads the words, "Hold fast." Jesus wants you to hold fast. There is therefore also a reason why the twin image of the traveler, the thirsty traveler, and the soldier appears only after we have seen the vision of the new creation and have been assured of its certainty. For the vision of the new creation and its assurance, they are meant to make you thirsty. And they are meant to inspire you to contend and to continue to contend for the faith. The sequence is crucial. First comes the promise, then the call. That's the reason why the gospel is good news. The promise always comes first. And if you love God, it's because God loved you first. And if you do anything, it's because God has done something in the first place. The promise always comes first. The sequence is crucial. And it shapes every Christian. That's the way it works. That's the way God works. The promise of God shapes every Christian. And so also the two images of the thirsty one and the conqueror, they must be seen as the consequence of God working in you by grace. When God works in a Christian, that work will solicit thirst. And it will steal a person's hand for warfare, spiritual conflict, to be sure. If by grace you have tasted that the Lord is good, you will thirst for more. And if by grace you have seen a vision of the new heaven and the new earth and you know it's true, you will renew your resolve that it's worth fighting for. Now, to be thirsty and to conquer, the twin image of our text, to be thirsty and to conquer, they are the consequence of God's grace at work in you. Now let's take a look at these two images. To the thirsty, I will give from the spring of the water of life without payment. Now you all know the story of the Samaritan woman at the well of Jacob. She met Jesus on one fine day, sitting there by the well, and Jesus offered her the water of life, living water. As a little poem says, Jesus gave her water that was not in the well. She went away singing and came back bringing others for the water that was not in the well. The water of life, as it is mentioned in our text, Of course, the water of life is not H2O. Its spring, its fountainhead, is the very throne of God and of the Lamb, as you will see in chapter 22, verse 1. There it is stated, that water comes directly from the throne of God. It is God who is the source of this water. And to drink of this water, therefore, is nothing less than life eternal in full measure. The fullest measure that even God can give. Or let me put it this way. The fullness of life that God and only God can pour into a human vessel, a human creature. Think of a glass of water. Your glass may be half full or half empty, depending on your perspective. In reality, it probably is much less than that. But that glass will be filled so that it can take no more. It was meant to hold this much, and it will be filled to the fullest measure. Also, to the woman at the well, Jesus said, if you knew the gift of God, it's free of charge. If you knew the gift of God and who it is who speaks to you, if you only knew the source of this water, you would have asked, and he would have given you water of life. Two things are of interest here. Number one, that water of life, the living water, is already available. Here, Jesus offers it to the Samaritan woman. It is therefore available to you already here, and it is a gift. It's free of charge. Number two, you have to acquire a taste for it. That is, you have to know the source, who it is who gives it, and you have to be able to know its true value. You have to be thirsty. If you are drinking of this water even now in this world, and you will experience full satisfaction in the new heaven and new earth. Consummate blessing, consummate life. I don't think that we know what this is. What is life? God will show you what he means. What is life here? This past week, I read about big game hunting. For a big game hunter, life is full only when you have shot down the big five. If you have shot an elephant, and if you have shot a rhino, and if you have shot a buffalo, and if you have shot a lion, and if you have shot a leopard, that's the big four, five, and if you have brought these down, then your life is full as a big game hunter. If you don't manage this in your lifetime, your life isn't full. Now, of course, in our culture, in our society, big game hunting is often frowned upon, but there has been a significant shift in the last 10 to 15 years, a shift towards experiences. People used to, and they still do, invest their money in real estate or in stocks. But there has been a shift towards spending less money so that you have more money for experiences. We bank on experiences to fill our lives with satisfaction, to make them full. And you want to travel the world. You want to take a trip in a hot air balloon. You want to climb a very particular mountain, maybe Everest. You want to run a special marathon, or you want to go on one of those great cruises. Now, for some of you, that's not beyond reach. Some of you have done some of these things. But it does not have to be. I want you to remember, it does not have to be. And it can become a way of life. It's the world. It becomes a way of life. It's compulsive and oppressive. That you have to pack as many of those experiences into your lifetime to make it full, to make it worth living. And although you think it makes your life full, it makes you empty, and it makes you blind to God. And to the fullness of life that He offers. And I guarantee you, it's not found in this creation. It's not found in experiences, however great they are. And when you have some of these experiences, be thankful for them. Yes, but be careful. It does not have to be. He can give so much more than you can imagine. He can give so much more than you could ever dream of. And He will make you drink from the spring of the water of life that flows from His very throne, from Himself. An image of which was seen on the cross when Jesus' side was pierced. It was not only blood, but water that flowed from Him. Life is with God. And there are eternal pleasures on His right hand. The water of life flows from His throne. And all I can say is this, in the words of Peter, you will be made to be a partaker of His divine nature. That's life in full. Are you thirsty for unending satisfaction? Are you thirsty for uninterrupted peace and joy in the Holy Spirit in full measure? Something that we, in this form in which we now exist, we cannot contain, we cannot experience, we couldn't handle it. You'd go crazy. But you will be made to partake of the divine nature. Those who are thirsty are not hard to spot. Are you thirsty? Do you want Him? Do you want Him more than anything else? Those who are thirsty are not hard to spot. They make decisions that lead them to the water of life. Even here, already in this world, Jesus offers it here in the gospel. And He will pour it fresh and full into you. So that you may know what is life. A definition that God will still have to give you, and you will have it. You will know it. You will experience it. It will be yours. It's the greatest of all divine blessings. It's consummation. Are you thirsty? Do you want Him? It's the thirsty, says the text, that will be there. The thirsty. And the thirsty traveler is one of those many, many Exodus images that abound in the book of Revelation. We've seen it all over the place. Only recall chapter 12, the beginning of the second half of this book. There the church is shown to be a people who dwell in the wilderness. And that was, of course, an echo of the 40-year journey of the children of Israel to the promised land. And do you remember how God took care of Israel in the wilderness? He allowed them to experience hunger. And he allowed them to experience thirst. And he also met their needs in miraculous ways. But hunger and thirst and deprivation and hardship all served to whet their appetite for God. As a matter of fact, they served to solicit a response. And so these difficult years in the wilderness, it wasn't easy. The difficult years in the wilderness, they called forth one of two responses. One, a hardening of heart. That is, craving a life that offers more security, which came to expression in the people's desire to return to Egypt. It was better there. We didn't have to worry about food coming from heaven. We simply took it. It was there on the marketplace. You would go there and get it. Here we have to wait for God to provide. Let's return to Egypt, shall we? And the other response was to trust God. As simple as that. And this, to trust God, is something that you cannot learn under ideal circumstances. Or do you think that anyone has ever learned to trust in God in a perfect world? I don't think so. This is part of the curriculum, as it was during the 40 years in the wilderness. God allowed them, as we heard earlier, Steve was reading the passage, he allowed them to experience hunger and thirst so that they would know what was in their hearts. Do you know what is in your heart? Are you thirsty? Do you want him more than anything else? Then God will satisfy you, the thirsty one. The same principle, therefore, applies to you. You will get your share of hardship and suffering. You do suffer. You do have hardship. You will get it if you don't have it. Sooner or later, one way or the other, we will all get our share. But if you are thirsty, then you will develop a growing thirst for God, for the water of life. If you know the Lord, if you have tasted that the Lord is good, you will develop a growing thirst for Him. And if you don't, you'll get bitter. You'll be motivated by fear and by guilt. And you'll be motivated by seeking satisfaction and filling in the things that the world can offer. You'd be tempted to return to Egypt. This is the first image, the thirsty one. It's the thirsty one who will be there. Here's the second image. The one who conquers will inherit these things. This is how the Greek reads. The ESV is a little bit confusing or misleading. The text reads, the one who conquers will inherit these things. And I will be his God, and he will be my son. The inheritance of these things, the one who conquers will inherit these things, harks back to verse 5, where God said, behold, I am making all things new. He will make all things new. And your inheritance as a child of God is no less than all things. These things, all things will be yours in Jesus Christ. Christ. Do you recall one of the temptations that the devil posed to him in the wilderness? He took him up to a very high mountain and showed him all the kingdoms of the world and their glory. And he said to him, all these things I will give to you if you fall down and worship me. The devil is a theologian, and the devil always understood that Christ's claim is universal. He would inherit the nations. He would inherit all the kingdoms. He would inherit all things. And the devil also knew that the way to glory was worship. To glorify God with the ultimate sacrifice, to so humble himself, and in humbling himself to so exalt God, that was the way to glory. And so Jesus came to conquer. This was a sacrifice that only God's Son could render to the Father. He came to conquer the world by humbling himself, even to the point of the cross, and to finish the work that the Father had given him to do. Only so, only in this way, he would return to a seat of glory and inherit all things. All things being made subject to him, both in heaven and on earth. He had to conquer the world in what seemed to be defeat by giving his life up to God. The way to glory was to take the cross, and so he conquered the world and death. And he now says to you and me, hold fast what you have until I come. The one who conquers, I will grant him to sit with me on my throne, as I have conquered and have sat down with my Father on his throne. And this promise, these words, they capture the promise of our text. The one who conquers will inherit these things, and I will be his God, and he will be my son. First of all, how do you know that you will inherit these things? Now let us suppose that you are of royal blood. How do you know that one day you will be a ruler? It's because you're a son or a daughter. How do you know that you will inherit these things? You know because you are a son or a daughter of God Almighty. He owns the business. He is the ruler of the realm, and you will share in this authority. It's your inheritance. It's yours by right. This promise, I will be his God and he will be my son, this promise confers royal status and royal authority to all who overcome the dragon, the beasts, and the harlot, Babylon, in persevering faith. You will be heir of all things. You will have royal authority. in the new creation as a son or a daughter of God. You will have royal authority. You will sit with him in his throne. Indeed, the words that you find here in our text, I will be his God and he will be my son, they reflect God's royal promise to David. For to David's son, this is 2 Samuel 7:14, God said, I will be his father and he will be my son. Ultimately, David's son is the Messiah. He is the Son of God. He is the ruler of creation and the throne is his. But here God promises that you will administer the Father's rule in the new creation along with Christ. You will be taken up into God's throne. As son and daughter of God, you will inherit all things. The kingdom will be yours to rule with Christ. It's your inheritance. And for now, you may be weak. You may be marginalized. For now, you may be overlooked. You may not make much of a difference. For now, you may seem as though you're socially insignificant. But if you conquer, if you overcome, if you hold fast, all things are yours. Much of what our parents have given to us turn out to be taxing, taxing to both body and soul. We inherit their DNA, which predisposes us to certain sicknesses or disease. And of course, we inherit their manners, and not all of them are pleasant. Much of what we give to our children proves to be a burden to them that they will carry for the rest of their lives. And of course, we always bequeath our sinfulness, original sin, which leads to death. And death already begins in the midst of life. So it has been since Adam, and there is no end in sight. But there was Jesus Christ. There was Jesus Christ. And he wasn't another one in that link, another link in that chain, that unending chain of sin and death. He came to break that chain. But he is not to remain the only one who breaks the chain. He's not the only one who overcomes, who conquers. You are to follow him, and you are to conquer with him working in and through you. And if you do, all things are yours. This is a call to endurance. As you go into the summer, as you go to new places, or if you simply continue to do what you've always done, this is a call to endurance. It is not those who begin the race or those who pick up a fight who will get the crown. It is only those who finish in loyalty to the gospel. Hold fast. If you have lost your grip on Jesus Christ, then you must reestablish the vitality of that link with him. The Father said of Jesus, "This is my beloved Son, with whom I am well pleased. Hear him." If you embrace him, you are an adopted child of God. And once in a while, as you know, once in a while, we feel that God is our Father. Once in a while, we know that we are God's children. But when that day comes, you will have the deepest intimacy with your Father, who never leaves you nor forsakes you. And you will have the deepest, richest experience of a son and of a daughter whose father is the King. King! God, the King, is your father. You, his child. That's yours. That's your inheritance. So conquer. Hold fast. This is the second image, the conqueror, the soldier, and it's also an Exodus motif. This is the reason why Deuteronomy 31 was also read to you earlier this morning. It speaks of holy warfare. God had given the promise to the fathers, and he handed it down to the people who stood on the brink of the promised land. They were told, I am giving you this land. I'm giving you the deed to the land. It is as though it's yours already. But they had to fight. They still had to fight, even though God had given them the land. They had to conquer. Even though God's grace always comes first and his promise is prior. Warfare in Canaan meant the possibility of death. Oh, there were casualties even among the Israelites. Warfare meant the possibility that you would leave your life on the battlefield. And so they had to put all of their eggs into one basket and venture with a sword in hand on God's promise. And even if some of them died, if they died looking to God's promise, they came home. They inherited, and they will inherit all things. The same choice is before you as a soldier of the cross. For in direct contrast, verse 8 closes with those who made a different choice, who will be in a different place, who will end up in hell. Cowards, faithless, detestable, murderers, sexually immoral, idolaters, sorcerers, and all liars. Who are these people? This is a warning directed not against those who are outside. This is a warning directed against those who are inside the church. In the first century Greco-Roman world, the seven churches of Asia, they heard this message and they understood what it meant. It identified those who are inside, those who under the pressure of persecution and seduction denied the faith, cowards and faithless ones. It identified those who murderously betrayed their fellow Christians because they were afraid of persecution. It identified those who practiced sexual immorality, both spiritually and physically, because they chose to participate in the cult of the emperor and in the sacrifices and the worship of the gods of the trade guilds. And then, of course, this list closes with a very inclusive term, all liars. What's a liar? A liar is a person who says one thing and practices another. Reread the seven letters to the seven churches of Asia, and you will see that the people that are mentioned here, they were inside those churches. Jesus warns them. Sexual immorality? Yes, that was part of the picture in those churches. Hypocrisy? Always part of the picture of the church. Lying? We all know what that is like. And the worship of God replacements translates into idolatry. The basic choice between God and anything else, a choice that you must make every day. It's a warning against compromising. You see this? It's a warning against compromising. Now, you may think, well, compromises are good. You need to make compromises to get through this life. That's true. But in all matters of faith, and when it comes to obeying God rather than men or yourself, compromise is not a good thing. Compromise is sin. But if you are thirsty and conquer in His name, then on that day, all this struggle, it will seem like nothing. And you will say to yourself, how could I ever have been tempted to seek fullness and satisfaction anywhere else but at the source, at the fountain of the water of life and the throne of God? Hold fast. It's the thirsty, and it's the one who conquers who will be there. Hold fast. This is your inheritance, and it's worth longing for, like a thirsty traveler, longing to have his thirst quenched. And it's worth fighting for, like a soldier on a battlefield. Let's pray.